It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We're opening up this incredible country because we have to do that. I'd love to have it open by Easter. Okay, I would love to have it open by Easter. I will tell you that right now. I would love to have that. It's such an important day for other reasons, but I'll make it an important day for this too. I would love to have the country opened up and just raring to go by Easter.
That was President Trump yesterday, and he would like to get it opened up. He said in a tweet just a few days ago that I read to you yesterday that he didn't want the cure to be worse than the disease, and it is certainly a consideration. We are learning so much. I'm going to get yes to that package that the Senate is going to be discussing today in just a second, but I want to give you some other good news. Deborah Birx, who is in charge of fighting this virus, she's the doctor that you see on the news or at every press conference every afternoon, just talked about the testing and how far we've come with that. Let's listen. Clip 8.
I just want to speak to the Americans for just a second, though. We have to ensure that we still are testing, even though probably by today we will have done more tests than South Korea did in 8 weeks, in the last eight days. In the last eight days, we've done more testing than South Korea. But we did that because we transformed the testing process, as the president spoke to. But we don't want people who are just worried to go get tested. If you don't have a persistent fever, if you don't have a cough, if you're not in the risk group, if you're not a nurse or doctor, we really want the testing and the drive-through testing and the testing that is provided in the cities to be very much still focused on the people who need it. Because there's only so much even those high-throughput machines are doing. They're doing about 50, 60, 70,000 tests a day now. They could get potentially to 150,000 a day. But we want to make sure we're testing in the areas that really have the problems.
All right. The point of that, the point of me playing that for you was just for her to distinguish between what the United States is doing and the rest of the world. And I want to couple that with an article that just came out, or a study that just came out from the Johns Hopkins Center for Healthy Security. It's called the Nuclear Threat Initiative. They basically said that the United States was prepared for pandemic better than any other country. This is Global Health Security Index. It was developed with the guidance from an international panel of experts in 13 countries with research by the Economist Intelligence Unit from 2018 to 2019. More than 100 researchers spent a year collecting and validating publicly available data. Okay, so this paper just came out, and I could read a lot about that, but let me just say that the Johns Hopkins, according to their Center for Health Security, the United States was prepared for a pandemic more than any other country. And we should just thank God for that, really. And, of course, it's because of our wealth and resources. We are a healthier nation already. Before this struck, we were just healthier. We were better equipped. And I want to tag on to that. You know, many of the, I'll say alarmists, look, I want to say that, but I don't want to discount the fact that people are dying and the disease is real. I just think you're not hearing the whole story. If you listen to CNN or MSNBC, you're hearing a twisted version. It's funny because we have a neighbor that plays his television very loud, and sometimes when we're outside in the back, we can hear it, and it's like we're hearing an alternate universe in terms of news. But for instance, they keep comparing the United States to Italy and saying, oh, millions of people are going to die. We are on the, there'll be mass death in 10 days, just like Italy. And you're hearing various versions of that. But I heard a breakdown last night. Liz Wheeler is on One America News, and she did a great little commentary on this, and I'm borrowing her information. I have talked a little bit about this, but she did a better job than I. She pointed out that Italy's very different from the United States for five key reasons that she points out. First of all, it's the second oldest per capita country in the world. The average age is 81. And I told you yesterday the average age of death in Italy was 80. And so she also points out that there are a high percentage of smokers in Italy. That's true of Europe in general. And a lot of them have lung conditions. And so, you know, you have the two things going, the older people and pre-existing conditions. And that's contributing to the massive amount or the very large amount of deaths in Italy. And also, there are cultural differences, like the Italians greet each other with a kiss. You know, they're very warm and very, very huggy. Of course, in my house, we're that way too, but it's more of an Italian mark. I hug a lot of people, you know, when I greet them, people I don't even know well. I'm just used to it. But in Italy, that's pretty normal. And so those cultural differences, and also I've said before, she didn't say this, Liz didn't, but I will. I don't think Italy's a very clean country, not like the United States and I would say Germany. Let's pick Germany out. We have a higher level of this personal cleanliness. At least we did before we had overwhelming numbers of immigrants from other parts of the world who don't understand Western hygiene. But for the most part, we still teach our kids to wash their hands and brush their teeth and, you know, use good bathroom hygiene. And then there is a direct line from Italy to Wuhan, China. And I did touch on this, too. There's been a lot of cooperation between businesses and the government in Italy and China. They've had thousands of Chinese living in, I think it's thousands, let's just say a lot of Chinese living in Italy, working in conjunction with the Italian government. And so that's another reason they have a direct line to Wuhan in particular. They also have, I've talked about all of these things, but she expanded, single-payer health. People in Italy, as I understand it, don't go see a doctor because of the healthcare system. They just go to the emergency room. So emergency rooms were already overwhelmed before this virus ever struck, and that's why they just collapsed when so many people got sick. And Italy, by the way, the last point she makes is it is not using what South Korea was using, which is that there are two drugs. I think one's called Keletra, and the other is hydroxychloroquine, which is people are finding success with that. No doctor or medical person is claiming it's the cure, but there have been very great, wonderful stories. In fact, we'll play one of them for you later if we have a chance. We are 10 days behind Italy, and so those people that say that we're going to have mass death like Italy are probably just wrong about that. So for the reasons I just said. All right, so last night was a big night in the Senate. Mitch McConnell was pretty elated. This was, I'm thinking maybe 2 o'clock in the morning. Let's listen. Mitch McConnell.
Well, Madam President, I have an update for the information of all senators and for the information of the American people, and it's good news. It's good news for the doctors and nurses in emergency rooms around the country who are waiting for more masks and more funding. It's good news for families all across America. At last, we have a deal.
All right, so they do have a deal. There was a, you know, tempers flaring again last night, but Chuck Schumer is, you know, boasting about how they've made a deal. Some are saying that's a cover for the fact that he's had to cave on some things, but don't be too excited because there's a lot more complication here. I think Lindsey Graham on the Senate floor last night in the wee hours of the morning was exasperated, and he sort of explained what's happening. Let's listen. Clip 11.
What's going on here? Endless negotiations. Mr. President, in case you're watching, tell Steven Mnuchin to come back to the White House and end negotiations. I'm all for negotiating. I try to make deals. I understand the give and take of life and the give and take of politics. But I've been called by two good friends on the Democratic side in the last 5 or 6 hours wanting more money. End the negotiations. This bill is $2 trillion. There's a ton of money in this bill for people who need it. But what we're doing now is every special interest group in town is trying to get a little bit more. Nickeling and diming.
All right. But now I want to get into the weeds with this. And this is maybe the most important thing I have to tell you this morning, because they are scheduled to vote on this, I think, midday sometime. That's what we think, like early afternoon. This is the Senate. But, of course, the House has to also pass this same bill. And Nancy Pelosi, meanwhile, has been working on her dream bill. As you well know, we talked about it yesterday, horrible slush fund for all of her pet projects, but probably the most damaging, potentially, maybe arguably the one they're still pushing that is the most damaging, is universal vote by mail. The Senate Democrats were talking about this, too. Universal vote by mail. the experts are saying it would be a really bad deal just for practicality, because states, it would place an enormous burden on states with low rates of vote by mail. But I want to tell you why the left wants this, because a fundraiser went out last night, a progressive turnout PAC. This morning, Mitch McConnell destroyed Democrats' bill to create a national vote-by-mail system. He refused to even hold a vote. This health crisis, McConnell knows that this health crisis could last months unless everyone can vote by mail. Millions of Democrats could be afraid to vote in person, and Trump will be reelected. The 2020 election is at stake, so we're racing to launch ads to force Republicans to pass the bill. We just need $100,000 by the end of the day. We have only one shot to guarantee every Democrat can vote without risking their health and the health of others. We must do everything in our power to implement universal vote by mail in every state before the 2020 general election. Oh, it goes on and on. And can you imagine why they want to do this? Anybody? It's called the Turnout Project. President Obama is all about this. And they say getting Democrats to the polls is the most effective way to win elections, and increasing Democratic voter turnout is the only way to defeat Donald Trump. So there's a lot more to their details, but I'm telling you, they're very anxious to pass this. And they want to hold the Republicans hostage unless they will agree to sign off on universal vote by mail. Now, vote by mail, who do you think is going to be voting? How do you know they're going to be citizens? How do you know that they're going to be voting their own ballot? How do you know that Democrats are not going to be harvesting these ballots as they did in the last election? You see the picture, you get the drift, right? And so I do have something I suggest. I suggest you call your senator and your congressperson and tell them absolutely no to universal vote by mail. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Don't sell, you know, the country's well-being for a long-term solution that's going to be horrific. This is what they're doing. It's just amazing. It's the thing they're still holding on to. Now, we don't know if Nancy's going to be pushing her other bad things still. I read an article saying that she'd backed away a little bit, you know, because she got really bad press about, you know, wanting to give, what, $300 million to Kennedy Center, where she likes to go. And see, you know, various things in the guise of coronavirus, all the stuff they're pushing, making flights, each flight announce how much carbon emission they're using, forcing airlines to go to biofuels. It's just these are the kinds of things trying to institute the Green New Deal. That's what they were trying to do. Whether she's going to do it today, I don't know. But if she insists on these things, there will be no bill passed. There just won't. But the number one issue this morning is this universal vote by mail. And honestly, this is the thing that you could help with. If they hear from you this morning, your senators, don't cave on this, Senator so-and-so, fill in the blank. Don't you dare cave on this. This is too important. This will have an effect. This would have a terrible effect on both sides. Who do we know who's voting? How do we watch? Besides, we don't want to federalize elections. That would be a horrific thing, as I've talked to you before about, because that would mean that it would be control from Washington. As it stands, all 50 states just do whatever they see right according to their own circumstances in their own state. They all have different rules. They have different dates. It's an autonomy that's important. And so we don't want to federalize these elections, and we sure as heck do not want to vote for universal vote by mail. So call your senator this morning. No universal vote by mail on this coronavirus package. Why are they connected? Of course, the Democrats are really good at, you know, trying to make it relevant, but it isn't relevant only for them. This is a chance for them to take the election away, take the presidency away from Donald Trump, and so there's nothing they won't do, plus win every other election from here to eternity, because they would manage that very, very well. Do you want that to happen? I don't think so. So let's make those calls to our senators and to our congressmen and tell them no universal vote by mail. All right, coming up next, Arabella, that slinking, overwhelming billion-dollar funded leftist movement funding ads to whip up a frenzy over this virus. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
The AFA, Marriage, Family, and Life Conference is coming June 25th through the 27th. Experts have lined up to help Christians make a difference in our increasingly wicked culture.
Dr. Alex McFarland.
There was a day when America was thoroughly predisposed to Christianity.
Dr. Michael Brown.
The pro-life consciousness in America is much more of a political and social and cultural and spiritual battle here in America than in other countries.
Bishop E.W. Jackson.
We get so used to seeing this perversion that it becomes normal.
Will and Miki Addison.
There is a first line defense against sex trafficking, and that would be intact families. That would be fathers being present, showing their daughters healthy affection, defending and protecting them.
The Marriage, Family, and Life Conference at Hope Church in Tupelo, June 25th through the 27th, includes a children's track as well. Learn more and register at marriagefamilylife.net.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Pam Miller, administrator of the Food and Nutrition Service. Her office's programs serve the immediate needs of low-income households, including those of the elderly, pregnant women, and young children. Luke 3, verses 10 through 11 reminds us of the importance of providing for those with limited means. And the crowds asked him, "What then shall we do?" And he answered them, "Whoever has two tunics is to share with him who has none, and whoever has food is to do likewise." Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Pam Miller as she works to feed the hungry. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer are engaging in an extortion plot against the American people, holding the coronavirus relief bill hostage in what amounts to an old-fashioned shakedown. Before any American worker can receive a check, before any American business can receive a loan, Democrats are demanding a treasure trove of leftist loot, bailing out the post office for all debt unrelated to the crisis, a new commission to study global warming, and $300 million for PBS Public Welfare Broadcasting. Majority Leader Mitch McConnell blasted the Democrats, said they ought to be embarrassed. But the truth is, Speaker Pelosi cares more about her socialist agenda than workers who've lost their jobs, senior citizens watching their retirement plans get decimated, and medical workers on the front lines of the fight against this disease. They ought to be embarrassed, but you ought to be outraged. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Have you been tested for the coronavirus?
No, I have not been tested for the coronavirus. I've had, thank God, no symptoms that I'm aware of. Doesn't mean that that can't happen.
Up for the next round of primaries, including...
I have not talked to any individual. Excuse me.
You know, you're supposed to cough into your elbow. I don't know, sir. I learned that actually covering your White House.
Actually, that's true. But fortunately, I'm alone in my home. But that's okay.
Vice President Biden, thank you so much for your time. Please stay healthy.
For keeping businesses shut.
We have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what.
And what is it like to be a candidate in the time of social distancing?
Well, I'm doing fine, thank you. And I think we've been...
Public, but first of all, in this crisis, spoke earlier, he's talking...
And I tell you what, I'm so darn proud. And those poor people who have lost, anyway, it's just, my heart goes out to
them. No. Listen, we have to make a choice about who leads this country.
I just can't figure the guy. It's like watching a yo-yo. I shouldn't have said it that way. It's like watching.
It feels that way. I want to. The It's okay. About the reporting in the New York Lloyd to Home Alone with children.
Why doesn't he just act like a president? That's a stupid way to say it.
You know, Donald Trump was asked.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
No, probably best I don't.
All right, that was a montage. That wasn't one appearance. That's Joe Biden. He is the candidate for president. He will be for the Democratic Party. That was a montage of him on CNN, ABC, MSNBC, confused and coughing his way through interviews. And, of course, there are no debates now because everything's shut down. And President Trump, who is appearing every day, you know, in these press conferences, spending probably 24/7, and I doubt he even sleeps very much at night, working on fighting this virus and not campaigning, not coming to your state. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, as it were, there's an organization that's planning on running plenty of ads themselves while the president is doing what he's doing and occupied. They have plans for him, and I want to talk about that this morning. Hayden Ludwig, I should say the German way, is with us this morning. He's an investigative researcher for the Capital Research Center in Washington, D.C. Capital Research is famous for, honestly, they do exactly what they say. They do this phenomenal research. They've been in operation for, I know, personally, more than 20 years. They've been a go-to group for me, highly respected. And Hayden, thanks for joining us this morning.
Sandy, great to be on with you.
Hayden, you are the researcher. I don't know if you have more than one working on this Arabella. Are you the primary person researching Arabella?
I am, yeah. So I actually stumbled across them about a year and a half ago. We published a long report on it almost exactly 1 year ago. We're coming out with a sequel report covering everything that we've since discovered in the coming months. So I'm kind of the known guy outside of Arabella's headquarters who knows what's going on with them. I think so, anyway.
And still you're laughing. I mean, okay, so I have talked about this, but just to remind people, Arabella Advisors is like a, I think of a, the snake, that's the famous snake that just endlessly goes. It just has its tentacles in every single area. It is a multi-billion-dollar enterprise by the far left. Hayden, but I should turn it over to you. What Arabella Advisors, if you were to try to make it simple for people who'd never heard of it, what would you say?
Yeah, you could also think of it as a hydra, right, with a lot of heads.
That's the word
direction.
I was looking for. Yes.
Yeah, well, so you can actually, you know, if you want to visualize this, picture a pyramid, right? You have a guy on top named Eric Kessler, who is an alumni from the Clinton administration. He's since become an activist and then started his own company. That's what we're talking about, Arabella Advisors. It's a D.C. for-profit company that calls itself a philanthropy consulting company. It basically means that they cater to the biggest foundations on the left in this country. Well, underneath Arabella Advisors is a network of four nonprofits, all of them located at Arabella's plush D.C. office. All of these nonprofits act like they're independent, but in reality, when you look at the boards and you look at the amount of money they pay to Arabella itself, the company itself, they're really just an extension of the company. The reason they have this entire network is they can go to these major left-wing donors like George Soros or Tom Steyer, who can pay them hundreds of millions of dollars to run attack ads to create a network of what we call pop-up groups. They're basically websites that are designed to fool you by looking like standalone activist groups. They have names like Healthcare for America Now, and they have a donate button. You can drop money in there. They're doing all these things to fight for progressive values, et cetera, et cetera. But when you dig into them, you realize the IRS doesn't see them as a nonprofit. They're just a face for one of the four real nonprofits run by Arabella. So it's this massive empire of groups pushing the left's agenda. And what you see on the ground as an average person is all of these grassroots activists who are fighting for you, and you have no idea that it's actually a huge inside job worth billions of dollars in one address in D.C.
Hayden, can you give us a specific example of something that one of these four nonprofits or their subsidiaries by various millions of hundreds of other names have really been involved in that people would recognize? I recognize they're all over the country doing all kinds of things, but like for instance, the Kavanaugh hearing, were they involved in that rapid turnaround or something like that that people would recognize?
Yeah, you actually brought up my favorite example. This is actually how I found this group. So you can kind of see how I trace back to these guys. So everybody remembers Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation process. It's unforgettable, right? Well, there are a ton of groups protesting outside of the Supreme Court. You guys covered it. Fox covered it. All of these crazy activists waving pre-printed signs saying things like Kavanaugh is too extreme for the Supreme Court, all their slogans. Well, I was on the ground covering that during one of these, and I saw a group called Demand Justice. Well, I did some digging into these guys. They have a slick website. They have all these people out in front of the Supreme Court, in front of the Senate, trying to derail the confirmation process back in 2018. But when I went to search the IRS archives, I realized there's no group called Demand Justice, and yet somehow they're collecting money. That's how I traced them back to a nonprofit called the 1630 Fund. This is one of those four in-house nonprofits run by Arabella. And again, you look at its board, it's got Kessler on it. It has all of his top lieutenants on it. It's the idea that it's independent from the company is a joke because it's really just an extension of this company. Well, Demand Justice is just one face of this, right, focused on attacking Trump's nominees at every level of the court. So not just Brett Kavanaugh. They've attacked his dozens and dozens of federal court appointees. Naomi Rao was the appointee he chose to take Brett Kavanaugh's seat in the district of the appellate court in D.C., rather. Well, I was there, too. They were slamming her with all sorts of ads on social media. They were out front of the Senate during her confirmation process, calling her the most horrific names. So if you look at these people, you'd think that there's a dedicated group of citizens out there who really care about this issue, not that they're really well-paid activists, but are just part of the left's professional activist machine. It's really deceptive.
Hayden, do you have any idea how they connect and how large that network of activists is? It'd be interesting to know that. Any way of knowing it?
We've counted up about 340-plus of these pop-up groups. That's those fake websites. It's tricky to say. Here's why they call them pop-ups, because they can appear in a minute, right? They can appear as quickly as it takes to actually create a website, instantaneously, but they can also be taken down instantaneously. So we've seen groups, for instance, they weren't very big, but we've seen groups that were fighting on health care, that were fighting on the environment, that they can basically unplug them from Arabella's system, if you will, and you'll never find them again. So they can appear one day and disappear the next, and which is why we count up 340 of these things, right? We only know probably 120, 130 are running at any given time. But if you look over the 15 years that Kessler's been running this kind of operation, the guy's put together hundreds, and those are just the ones we know about. I mean, it's possible he's put even more out there that we'll just never find because I wasn't looking for them. It's incredible.
All right, so we could talk endlessly about that, which I'd actually like to do. But I want to ask you, we want to get to the case at hand, the problem du jour with this particular group. And that is that they are now, as I understand it, starting to run millions of dollars worth of ads blaming President Trump for the coronavirus. Explain what you know in more detail about that, Hayden.
So think of Arabella as a funding platform, right? They're one of their biggest things is they move money to groups that aren't necessarily run by them. So we're dealing with right now hundreds of thousands of dollars moved through Arabella's nonprofit network into two organizations. They have really confusing names. They're called Pacronym and American Bridge. We'll tackle them one at a time. Pacronym and American Bridge are not run by Arabella, but they're closely associated. You can think of them as just other extensions of this enormous multi-billion-dollar left-wing professional machine. Pacronym, you actually probably are familiar with. If you remember the Iowa caucus debacle from some months ago when there's a company called Shadow Inc., ran the app for the Democratic Party. Okay. Shadow Inc. is a for-profit company that created that malfunctioning app. It's owned by a group called Acronym. Acronym is actually a nonprofit. How a nonprofit can own a for-profit is one for the lawyers, but Acronym is basically the sister to this group, Pacronym. No, it's all really massively confusing. What you need to know is Pacronym is running huge ad campaigns. The latest number I read was they're going to spend $5 million in battleground states attacking Trump in 2020. So Acronym and Pacroner were basically two sides of the same coin getting Arabella funding. We actually traced back money to both sister groups in there, Acronym and Pacronym, from the Arabella machine. What makes this really tricky is Arabella is a service. You put money into it, then the money leaves the system, and guys like me watching on the outside can't tell where the money originated. We just see it coming from Arabella, but there's originally a big donor in there somewhere. We'll never be able to tell, right? And that's what makes it so tricky and convoluted. So these ads are really dark money because they're coming out of nowhere to attack Trump. The other group I'm talking about is America. Sorry, go ahead.
No, the point you just made was one I wanted to emphasize, is that the left is always complaining about dark, so-called dark money on the right. That's, you know, the Koch brothers and all the other dark money. We don't exactly know where this money's coming from because they funnel the money of other big donors. But they have probably, arguably, as much, if not more, than the Koch brothers. Do you know how to quantify that?
Oh, easily. It's massively more. I'll put it this way. We've tried to add up all the money in they call it the 501c4 world. Those are just nonprofits that can do some kind of lobbying work. We tried to add all that up. It's really difficult to get an exact number, but you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars. If you look at the Arabella Network, in just 2018 alone, all of the Arabella groups brought in $600 million. Since 2013, they've brought in close to $2.5 billion.
Billion, yeah.
I don't know any groups on the right that are remotely close to that, let alone doing all the shenanigans that they're doing. So it's really just apples and oranges. And the fact that the left can do this is simply, I think, because nobody until now has really reported on this massive Arabella scheme. And what's funny to me, you don't want me going off on a little short tangent here. Mm-mm. When we reported this, nobody had reported on it for 15 years. I found nothing in the news when I first started breaking the story. Now, a year later, we finally got the Washington Post, Politico, Fox, of course, you guys, to report on this. And what's so funny to me is watching the left suddenly start to tear its hair out because they're so terrified over the idea that suddenly the left and me have more dark money than the right. Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. Well, Hayden, let's talk about this in a way that people who are living in various states can understand and identify what they're seeing. And I guess we could say that these ads will be like regular people. People, they'll make a lot of sense, just like the protesters look like regular people. They will be done very well. And they won't just be about the president being responsible for this virus or the fact that he was a disaster, how he handled it. Those will be the themes, and we don't need to explain that part. But aren't they also attacking individual senators, Republican senators in various states?
They sure are. So there's a group called Protect Our Care. It's run by that same 1630 fund we were talking about earlier. So it's a direct Arabella arm, if you will. Well, Protect Our Care has already run an expensive ad attacking Montana Congressman Steve Daines as a Republican. And get this, they're accusing him, because of his stance opposing Obamacare, they're accusing him of making the coronavirus worse for Montana citizens because of his position, well, they say his position on pre-existing conditions. So they're trying to take little things like this and twist them against Republicans and Trump, of course. And it's just shameful watching them politicize this virus that doesn't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It attacks you either way.
Yes, you know, Nancy Pelosi hit that theme. I mean, they're all working together. They're very good at messaging. Very good. Could I say very good? And she was calling the president out for doing away with Obamacare. Of course, he hasn't yet, but it's in the Supreme Court. They're going to be considering it soon. And she linked it, of course, to the virus. And then, of course, now Arabella is going to do the bidding of doing that through these ads. And there are a lot of Republicans who are very vulnerable, senators especially, in this election cycle. So that's what Arabella is doing. Hayden, this is great research, and we want to talk to you again. We will put your report on our Facebook page, and we appreciate the heads up. We will be watching for it, and we appreciate your great research. Thank you, Hayden.
So great to be with you.
Okay, great to have you. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. January 28, 2020, the U.S. Department of Justice held a press conference and issued a press release announcing the chair of Harvard University's chemistry and biology departments and two Chinese nationals were charged criminally for separate instances of economic espionage and biomedical research theft on behalf of the Chinese government, including smuggling 21 vials of biological research to China. Dr. Charles Lieber of Harvard was paid over $1.5 million by the Chinese government to establish a research lab in Wuhan, China. COVID-19 originated in Wuhan. Why aren't there more questions about this?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
AFR's own J.J. Jasper is a morning on-air personality, author, comedian, Christian, and family man. J.J.'s also a keynote speaker at banquets, men's ministry events, pregnancy center fundraisers, and more. Here's what others are saying.
Hi, this is Nancy Wessling, Executive Director of the Pregnancy Care Clinic in Salem, Illinois. J.J.'s helped us set a record for the most funds raised at our banquet.
Information on J.J.'s availability to speak at your event is at jjjasper.com.
In the audiobook, The God You Thought You Knew, apologist Alex McFarland exposes 10 common myths about Christianity.
Each of these myths contain a grain of truth, yet also involve a level of deception that blurs the vision of what God intends for our lives.
The God You Thought You Knew is available at the American Family Association store. Visit afastore.net.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. God has always stopped plagues in unorthodox ways through his power. Elisha healed a poisoned spring by throwing salt in it, and healed a poisoned pot of stew by throwing flour in it. God may have provided a similarly unorthodox cure for the coronavirus and chloroquine, an inexpensive anti-malarial medication that can be used on patients of all ages and is almost immediately effective. A Florida man was on his deathbed after contracting coronavirus. It got so bad he thought last Friday was his last day on Earth because he couldn't breathe. After convincing his reluctant doctor to prescribe chloroquine, he took some and his pain was gone by the next morning. He could breathe and it was as if nothing had happened. This may be the answer to coronavirus, and if it is, it would be just like God.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. You want it bad, you get it bad, is a maxim that applies in spades to must-pass legislation. A case in point is the emergency bill now being finalized in Congress that's ostensibly aimed at alleviating the damage being done to the American people and economy by the Chinese virus. Unfortunately, House Democrats have seized upon the opportunity, in the words of their chamber's third-ranking leader, Representative Jim Clyburn, quote, to restructure things to fit our vision, quote. As a result, the House-passed version would enhance the power of unions, help advance the radical environmentalist Green New Deal agenda, and enable voting fraud on an unprecedented scale. Initially, Democratic senators fell into line with Speaker Pelosi's demands. While they ultimately won't get everything she wanted, the $2 trillion bill rewards such shakedown artists at the expense, figuratively and literally, of suffering American taxpayers. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
We are more divided than ever. President Trump is causing havoc in people's lives. It's the tweets, it's the blame game, scandals and lawsuits. Voted for Trump in 2016, will not be voting for him in 2020.
All right, that's an example of one of the ads we were just talking about with Hayden Ludwig. Hayden, by the way, is with Capital Research Center, and we will link not only their research on this, the issue of Arabella, which is like, you know, this tentacle of groups that spring up overnight and support various really bad causes, seemingly grassroots, like people, you know, concerned about stuff, but really they're a network of people that are paid. And the people behind this are people like George Soros and Tom Steyer, but there are other groups. There are big corporations, Rockefeller Group and others, that would really appall you. They've raised billions of dollars and they are intent on transforming this country, bending it to their will, like James Clyburn said in that private, off-the-record meeting with other congressmen last week. This is a great opportunity to do to reshape this country the way we want it. This is a great opportunity, and so they're taking it. They've got the money, they're organized, and I guess it just depends on us, doesn't it, as to whether they're going to be able to roll us over with their deception and all the money influence that they have. I wanted to give you an example. There are several Republican senators who are in trouble. Of course, there are more Republican senators up for election in 2020 than Democrats. So it was already sort of a treacherous year for the Republicans in the Senate. And I know you have mixed feelings about that. I do too. Some of them are good and some of them are bad. But if the Republicans lose control of the Senate, it will not be a pretty picture. And I don't need to spell that out. And so Arabella and their affiliates, acronym, pacronym, you know, fill in the blank of who's doing what, are running also this ad against Steve Daines in Montana. And this is what this sounds like. Clip 13.
Too many Montana families go to sleep at night worried about health care. Coverage, costs, now the fear of coronavirus. That doesn't worry Steve Daines. He voted to eliminate protections for 425,000 Montanans with pre-existing conditions, rip coverage away from over 100,000 people, and scrap Montana's Medicaid expansion, and let insurance and drug companies drive up healthcare and prescription drug costs for seniors. Call Senator Daines. Tell him it's time to put the healthcare of Montanans first.
All right, so and they're going to tie, of course, Obamacare, universal health care into the coronavirus. That's what they're doing right now. And when there were exit polls from the last primary, last Tuesday? I've lost track. Or the week before. And I remember telling you that the number one issue for voters was health care in the Democratic side. That was pretty amazing. And that happened in 2018, I believe, also. It was like the top issue for Democratic voters. Of course, healthcare is very important to all of us, but for the Democrats, this is an issue that, I think the country is greatly divided. And of course, Republican voters, generally speaking, want there to be private healthcare insurance. They don't see the federal government controlling insurance that's coming out, our insurance, our health coverage, as coming out well for Americans. I mean, just look at Italy, as I described earlier in the opening piece about the way their healthcare system just caved and crashed. And it's the way it was for most of those countries because they had public health and they are not equipped. A government cannot possibly, unless it's Saudi Arabia with their awash with their millions in oil fields, cannot pay for health care for every person, for every need. So they have to make choices, and they have to make cutbacks, and they can't have as many doctors because doctors aren't paid as well. So less doctors, more patients, more longer wait times, less access to medications, to surgeries, to treatments. That's just the nature of socialized medicine. You can check what's happened in Canada. You can check what's happened in the British Healthcare Service, the National Health Service. And it's just the way it is. And so, but the left want to control your health care because they want to control you. It's as simple as that. So back to Arabella, they are now going to be running these ads against senators and even some that maybe have not been champions for conservative causes are going to be attacked, and some that are really conservative are going to be attacked. But you just have to make the calculation yourself about what we need to be doing. This is a time to be smart, I'll tell you that. We have to be, as God told us, wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Of course, you know, voting for a senator is not voting for a deacon in your church or an elder. It's not the same thing. This is a public matter. It is a matter of government, not a matter of church. You know what I'm saying. I'm saying that Romans 13 separates our responsibilities. We have responsibilities as citizens, but our evaluations are different because it isn't Sunday school or church. And so, anyway, you'll watch for those ads and then do what you think is right. And by the way, yesterday, of course, the Senate came to an agreement. Now, they have not voted on it yet. They're supposed to vote midday today, but Griff Jenkins had a great report at Fox and Friends this morning. And I thought you should hear more detail about the agreement they tentatively reached in the Senate. Here it is.
This is history. This is the largest rescue package the country has ever put forth. $2 trillion worth of aid for suffering American workers, small businesses, and key industries, and possibly saving the nation from the brink of recession.
It's good news for the doctors and nurses in emergency rooms around the country who are waiting for more masks and more funding. It's good news for families all across America. At last, we have a deal.
We call it unemployment compensation on steroids. Every American worker who is laid off will have their salary remunerated by the federal government.
Now, the text of the bill has yet to be released, but here are the key components we expect. The rush of direct checks to Americans, expanding unemployment assistance, emergency loans to small businesses, stabilizing key national industries like the airlines, and strict oversight for large corporations. That means no stock buybacks for CEOs. The actual numbers will come out once it's finalized, but expected to go along these lines, $500 billion for corporate liquidity, $350 billion for small businesses, $150 billion for state and local governments, and $100 billion for hospitals, plus what everyone wants to know how much those direct payments will be. We expect it to be around $1,200 per person for those making up to $75,000 a year, with a reduction thereafter until a cap in $99,000. Now, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, who led the negotiations for the White House, says the president was pleased and will, quote, absolutely sign this deal. What Speaker Pelosi does with it, we'll have to find out. Now, she has a couple of options. She could do a quick voice vote and pass just what the Senate did. That's dangerous because it only takes one member to shoot it down, or she could convene the House on Thursday or Friday and vote on it, or she could, as you mentioned, Steve, try and move on her own $2.5 trillion package, which has a lot of objections from Republicans already.
All right, so there are, I guarantee you, in a $2 trillion bill, there are a lot more things to talk about, and we'll be hearing about them as things unfold. I just hope and pray that they did not sign off, meaning McConnell and the leadership did not sign out of desperation off on some really horrible things. But I don't know that they didn't. So we'll just see. I did read a headline that said that they think Nancy Pelosi caved to some extent. I don't know what that means, and I can't report that with any certainty until I actually have a chance to look into it. We're learning more about what Nancy Pelosi's bill is going to look like, and they are going to pass it in the House, it looks like, by unanimous consent. So the congressmen are not in their office, and so Nancy Pelosi can write this bill and they can pass it by unanimous consent, which is a mystery to me how that could possibly be the case. And by the way, if we're in such an emergency, why aren't the congressmen in Washington working? Are they social distancing? Honestly, if the Senate is there, why can't the House be if this is such a crisis? But anyway, Nancy, back to the issue at hand. Nancy Pelosi, we're learning more about what her bill, what she wants. We talked about them bailing out the post office, talked about them implementing their famous Green New Deal in really horrible ways. We talked about them trying to take over the whole voting system. It's not just same day, what they call vote by mail, which is what they're still hanging on to, that I told you about earlier. The Democrats, even in the Senate, are insisting on vote by mail. They want every household in America to be able to vote, you know, on their own, just send it out to them and let whosoever will may come to vote on that ballot and send it back. We have no idea who would be voting. We have no idea if they'd be citizens. No controls whatsoever. We have no idea if Democratic staffers or some of these Arabella workers will, you know, be able to go out and, you know, collect ballots and fill them out the way they want. This is what they have done in some elections. It would be a disaster. And yet that's what Democrats are pushing for in this coronavirus bill to save the country. You get the picture. But now we're learning more about what Nancy Pelosi wants beside those things. On page 127, the PBS, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, is handed an additional $300 million to prevent, prepare for, and respond to coronavirus. On page 39, the Internal Revenue Service is given an additional $278 million. Page 150, the Department of State Migration and Refugee Assistance is allotted $300 million for migration and refugee assistance. There are so many of these things. The John F. Kennedy Center for Performing Arts on page 77 is given $35 million for operations and maintenance requirements related to the consequences of the coronavirus. And then two Washington, D.C. universities also get money. One of them is Howard University, $13 million because they need it for the coronavirus. The problem is Howard has an endowment fund, which currently stands at $692 billion. They might not need that $13 million, but who am I, you know, to make a judgment on that? Nancy Pelosi's pushing those things. Now, whether she's going to let them go, I can't imagine her letting them go, to be honest with you. I can't imagine her somehow suddenly caving and acquiescing to this Senate bill. But we'll see. We'll see. That's what some are saying is going to happen. By the way, the left, again, is pushing this vote by mail. And if you could, if you're concerned about that, as I am, because they're pushing it for 2020, they want to hurry. So because they don't want the president to be elected, they say it very clearly in their progressive turnout pack. They say, if we don't get millions of Democrats out, Trump will be reelected. So they're very clear in what their motive is. And so no vote by mail. No, are you kidding me? Universal vote by mail mandated everywhere in the United States? No. So tell your senator this morning and your congressperson, no. Are you kidding me? Don't trade off this bill for that. Don't do that. Don't add that in this bill. And that's what they're one of the things that's probably the hill worth dying on this morning. Last night, Laura Ingraham had a gentleman named Rio Giardinieri on. He's an American, but he has a, sounds like an Italian name to me. He shared his story, and I just wanted you to hear it because it's really pretty incredible. Rio is not a very old man from the picture that I saw of him, but this is what happened to him. Clip six.
You know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. But I know when I'm sitting here in pain and they've tried all kinds of antibiotics running through me, and I continue to get worse. My breathing became worse. Speaking became difficult. And a friend of mine from a prayer line reached out, a friend of 43 years, and says, hey, I saw this on Laura Ingraham's show. You need to take this medicine, and you need to ask your doctor to give it to you now. It happened that I just had a conversation with my nurse, the text comes in, so I asked her about it. She went to the doctor, and he came in and said basically he couldn't authorize that, but he did put me in touch with the infectious disease doctor who said, yes, Rio, I know what you're talking about. We've all seen it online. There's no trials. There's no studies. There's no guarantee this will work for you, and it could possibly hurt you. My feeling at that particular time was, I thought I was at the end of my rope, and I didn't see any other options. For me, it was a risk I was worth. It was worth taking for me. So he heard my story out, authorized it, and 30 minutes later, the nurse came in and gave me the first dosage.
Yes, and then he goes on to say that he has been feeling great since Saturday morning. His fever broke. He said he didn't even feel sick. It really is quite a story. Now, of course, the scientific authorities, the medical authorities, are not saying that hydroxychloroquine is for sure the cure for this virus. But there are people all over reporting that they've had results like this. So I think we have every reason to be encouraged, every reason. And besides, the most encouraging thing is that we have a God on the throne who is in control. It doesn't mean he's causing everything, but he's allowing it, and he knows, and he will mind and take care of his people. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.